Welcome everyone to the 93rd episode of the New Gen Mindset Podcast. I'm Dan Cozell here with Nick Tartaglia. I almost butchered that there quickly, Nick, but I think that's actually pretty good. 92-1.
No, 93.
I know, but I'm saying 92-1 on not butchering intros. So that was since we started this whole thing. What's going on, man?
I'm good. A little rainy today, a little murky. But I guess the weather's kind of lining with the market. Market seems to be kind of going sideways a little and down. You know, sentiment seems to be going a little sideways too, even though you kind of have like this portrayal of like the Bidenomics saving America. Things are escalating everywhere. So there's just so much to talk about, so many things going on.
Well, I mean, Bidenomics has not been as advertised, ironically, we had a guest on, I think it was 2 years ago now, and we were talking about sort of the socioeconomics and sort of the behaviors of society at the time, and it only seems to have been magnified to a certain degree now that, you know, may be irreversible. However, I think that's presented some really unique opportunities. But we're absolutely delighted to have him back on our show here today from the Morgan Report. David Morgan, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me, Dan. Good to see you, Nick.
Of course.
So let's continue, with everything that's happened the last 2 years. You know, silver and gold just can't seem to break above their all-time highs. There's this like tug of war that's really happening. We don't know when this is going to happen, but the writing has been on the wall for 3 years. Now it's evident. And, you know, I'm curious to know, like, what's it really going to take for everyone to start waking up, or is it too late?
Oh, boy, that's a great question. I think at this point, there will be more people waking up, especially with, social media being at, the point in history that it is. I mean, go back several years and, what did you have? I mean, you had Twitter. Facebook's been around for a long time. But then, you've got these new ones. You've got all these alternatives to the alternatives because the quote unquote, the YouTube started censoring people left and right. I mean, it was a free speech platform. In fact, I did one of my videos about 10 years ago. And what I said at the time is inaccurate now, but I said that, more important than the amount of gold or silver that you accumulate is your ability to say what you want to say, go where you want to go, do what you want to do. In other words, freedom. Without freedom, it doesn't matter how much real money you've got. And then I went on to say that the internet would provide an outlet for, the free market thinkers and all others, of course, to be able to communicate. But that was an accurate statement at the time, but inaccurate because I didn't foresee the private sector censoring us. And of course, when that happens, the free market always exists. So what happens is you started to see startups like Gab and I don't know them all. I'm on Odyssey. I'm on most of those, but I still have maintained my presence on YouTube and Twitter and some of the other ones. Why, I'm not sure. I've gotten enough strikes to take me off, but I haven't been censored off the main platforms, and I'll use the word yet. And the other thing that we said a little bit off air, we didn't have a big discussion off air, is what one of my friends, and even Art Bell, if anyone's familiar with, my age group, but he called it the quickening. And what's happening is there's an acceleration at the end of the great inflations, where people are looking for alternatives, how they can basically preserve their wealth. And that starts to accelerate, especially in today's day and age. I mean, most of the viewers are probably familiar with Moore's Law, which means you're going to double your computing capacity, every year, every 2 years. But it happens at an exponential function, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64. Pretty soon you start really getting some big numbers. And that's an analogy for where we're at. I see not only the information age, but the information overload age. And that's why, Instagram is very popular and TikTok, because you get that soundbite. It's not a 1 minute soundbite like we're used to in the news feeds. It's a 10 second or 20 second feed. And yet you can actually communicate, you know, something that's, you know, viable in that time frame. Occasionally, you certainly can't elaborate on it and do an in-depth study, but you can communicate something of meaning. And of course, a lot of meaningless crap, in my view, you know, with these cats playing basketball and whatever else is out there. I really don't view those very much. So long intro, but I think we're getting to a point of an inflection. We use the word tipping point. And I think it's valid because more and more people have woken up. How much more? I don't think there's going to be a lot more. I think an event, the event, cyber attack, grid shutdown, not talking the whole grid, maybe another illness, maybe all three. It's hard to say, but to my mind, there's been enough hints that the elites have given us, primarily about a cyber warfare situation, that I expect it to happen probably before the end of this year.
You expect what to happen before the end of the year?
Some type of cyber attack.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, a money center bank going down, maybe two bank failures, and they have to close the banks for 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another cryptocurrency that blows up, or an exchange that's caught for fraud, or Tether, which is not my favorite, is determined to not have the valuation that they purport. You know, they do a real audit on it and find out that they had a lot of Evergrande paper, and that paper is marked to market. And all of a sudden, the USDT is down to, you know, 82 cents instead of $1. I mean, and I don't want any of this to happen, believe me. But nonetheless, we have to be realists. And the real world right now is so full of corruption. All you have to do is, you don't have to lift up the rug and look under it anymore. You just look out your window and you see it.
So I have a question for you in terms of going back into past. I tell people they should go watch a series called The Hidden Secrets of Money that was made by Mike Maloney, which you were someone that was in the series, which, by the way, for anybody's listening, it's a great series. If you want to understand like economic history and a little more monetary systems and how it relates over and overlap to history, great series to watch. So my question is basically like, this was made almost a decade ago. So like, if you take it back then and you kind of contextualize what was said then and the things you guys were looking at, and now you compare and you overlap it with today, you think that those words are more relevant today than they were in the past?
I think so. I mean, the truth marches on majestically, whether you acknowledge it or not. The truth really doesn't care if you acknowledge it or not, because it's there and it's all important. In fact, when I really got very motivated to get into this business, the late, great Jim Dines, first speech I heard him say started with this, and this is very profound, and it really woke me up. Not that I wasn't somewhat awake at the time, but he started off his speech and he said, all that exists in the universe is truth or resistance to it. And then he went on to say, and in the moments that I've said that, the government has lied to you because they have printed more money than necessary, and watering the milk never works. And I really, you know, he's a very good speaker and he was a highly intelligent man. And that one statement about truth or resistance to it, I think still stands the test of time. He had a lot of sayings. I won't give them all to you. I have several in my mind because I followed his work for a very long time. But one I like about money is he says that gold is the monetary hitching post of the universe. So anyway, back to you. But yeah, I think it's more relevant because the thing that made America great, it's in the movie I was in, the Four Horsemen film.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, way before Make America Great ever was uttered by anyone. What I said unprompted, you know, he asked me a question, I answered. I said, America used to be great. And what made us great wasn't the best movie or the best clothing or the best auto design or the best airplanes. What made us great was integrity. That our ability to communicate contractually or verbally with everyone and have trust. Having that high integrity is what made this great. That's why a lot of what my friend Richard Mayberry calls chaos, STAN, for all the stands, is they're not that trustworthy. But we, the United States, is not that trustworthy anymore. It started in many ways, but monetarily, it was basically outed in August 15th, 1971, which we just had the anniversary of.
Mm-hmm.
And we were lying, you know, and a lot of people, even in the establishment and non-establishment, even in our, let's say, echo chamber, will say the gold standard doesn't work, but it does. The problem with the gold standard is there's a human element. Mm-hmm. So if you print up more receipts than there is gold to back it up, you've lied, you've cheated, you've lost your integrity. And that's exactly what happened. And then we're in the fix we're in now.
It's funny because like Nick and I were talking to, and I was just thinking, I was like, it's such a great time to bring you back on because of what Nixon did. I think it was almost 50 years. No, more than that, like 1971.
52 years ago.
Yeah, 52 years ago. That right there has been the declining moment, I think, for Western civilization, right? Because everybody always looked to the United States as the de facto leader of the free world. And I feel like that was like the peak of it. Maybe the 80s with all like the good stuff in business, but you know, ever since then, it's just been a total decline. And what's really happened is, you know, you're seeing this whole BRICS relationship start to emerge on the East, you know, with China, the Saudis, et cetera, and stuff like that. So I don't think we talked about this last time because, you know, we knew what China was up to. We knew Russia was kind of fiddling, trying to figure out what to do. Then they invaded Ukraine. This whole BRICS thing is a cause for concern, I think, for Western countries and people that are on this side of the world. So I'm curious to know, like, what your thoughts are on this whole development. And I guess, you know, looking at it from an opportunity standpoint, what could we do to protect ourselves in this environment?
A great question. As you know, I have a free and a paid service. My paid service, the whole editorial last month, so 2 weeks ago when we published the August edition, was primarily about the BRICS. I don't see it as being imminent. I see it as on the 22nd or thereabouts at this meeting. They will make an announcement, but I don't think they have anything to implement at this time. And again, it comes back to trust. And the problem they have, in my opinion, is do they trust each other? You know, do the Saudis trust Brazil? Does Brazil trust South Africa? Does South Africa trust, you know, there's other 20 countries. You did a pretty elaborate editorial about it. I definitely think its time has come. At the end of great inflations, there is a mitigation of the problem. And so people naturally go to, well, they don't even think about it as being the free market or free market thinkers, but that's what they do. It's like, how can I circumvent this? Well, you settle in your own currency. So I think that's the main thrust about the BRICS. Let's say they are never really tied to gold, or they're only tied to gold superficially, where it's not exchangeable, which is what it looks like at this point. But yet I can settle in yuan, I can settle in the rand, I can settle in whatever currency I have, and I circumvent final settlement in dollars. And that's very key. That's probably as important, if not more so, in my opinion, than settlement tied to gold. Now, gold's the ultimate, you know, I just made a statement, monetary hitching post of the universe, but it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be. It could be, in theory, you could go to a paper currency as long as the receipts, those pieces of paper, matched true goods and services, and there wasn't a mismatch between the receipts printed and the amount of physical economy, in theory, it would work. So as anti-paper money as I am, it's really what I'm really against is the dishonesty or the lack of integrity. Because my mission statement is to teach and empower people to understand the benefits of an honest financial system. And that's what brought to Tocqueville here from France. And what he determined why we were so happy, joyous, and free was that we had such trust between. That's what made us. It wasn't our, you know, ingenuity and all the things that kind of go along with it. It was the fact that you knew when you said you would do X, it would happen. In fact, Mayberry goes on, and he's got two laws that I don't have them memorized. I should. They're pretty simple. But the first one is do everything you say you're going to do, which is the basics of all contracts. I mean, if I tell you I'm going to be at this, you know, bus stop at 2 o'clock and pick you up, you know, and you know me and you know I'm trustworthy, I'm going to be there. But in today's world, it depends on who you're dealing with, but you know, you might have a 50-50 chance. So I think it comes back to, you know, what's commonly talked about in these first principles and the ability to understand the most powerful thing in the universe is the truth. And the more you align yourself with it, regardless of what the life throws at you, your ability to respond rather than to react is key, especially with your generation. I mean, you guys have got a lot of weight on your shoulders. And the only way out, really, is to get to the bottom. And we're not there yet. We have to hit bottom, in my view, before we can really come back. And we've got to ride down. We're not there yet. The physical economy is deteriorating. The world economy is contracting. And instead of being this new one world order and everything, you're seeing more and more disharmony between nations. Mm. You're not seeing more harmony. If really the one world order is taking place, it'd be a lot more orderly and everybody would be in line. Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. And we do see that in some places. I mean, I'm a pretty good thinker, at least I've been told so. And, you know, when the illness came, looks like everybody's in line. And the few that weren't were usually black men from Africa and they lost their lives. And that's the truth. You know, let's get with it. I mean, not that you guys aren't with it. You put someone like me on your show. But there's a lot of people that are not willing to go, let's say, that extra mile. And I don't do it on every show. Kind of depends on who I'm dealing with, the age group is, and what I believe in their ability to further along the principle that we're much more alike, regardless of our skin color or our belief system, than we are different. And that's what we have to look at. Hmm. Focus on the humanity side rather than the other side that we're always bombarded with the mainstream media.
You know, it's funny because if we bring it back to like basically Ludwig's book of Human Action, kind of it's like if we just focused on action, I think like the superficial side of humans, of human dynamic and human interaction would kind of fade away because we'd be so distracted by these superficial peacocking, showing off things because we're focused on what works, what doesn't work. Where are we moving? Where are we not moving? And then I guess through those actions, the system of trust kind of expands. And it's the foundation of society. You know, like if you don't have a free market system where price mechanisms can kind of establish themselves objectively, then there's no way to kind of build and take on credit and kind of find a way to kind of sustainably build your wealth and your economy because there's no trust in the price mechanisms you have. It's chaotic. So same principles would kind of go to the human side of things. If there is no collaborative spirit, no trust between each other, there's no foundation that can be built in a society. Therefore, there's no growth to ever come from it. And it, you know, it's funny seeing you talk about these things. Well, not, I wouldn't say funny, but more ironic or coincidental that like the first principles you talk about, we just completely neglected it. 5,000, 6,000, 10,000 years of human history. We still seem to ignore that. Like these lessons, we have to keep making them over and over and over. And it's just something as simple as just, you know, let's just have a conversation. Let's figure out what works, what doesn't work. Let's remove those mechanisms that are just impeding our individual abilities. And watching the documentary you made with Mike Malone was such a great documentary that showed that, you know, it's like we've complicated things way too much. And you see the chaos, you see the division, you see the anger and the regression we're experiencing. So well, it's an interesting time to be alive. And I agree that like, and I think that for me, myself as a millennial generation, I think that it's on our shoulders to accept the burden that's coming our way to kind of help pivot it in a different direction. Cause if we don't, I think that we're like one of the last generations to either accept the pain or not. And if we don't, I think there is a breaking point where there's just no coming back.
Oh, it could be. I mean, it's been a long time since I looked at The Fourth Turning, but that's a great book. And it's pretty accurate as far as where we're going and the cycles that we go through. So is the film, The Four Horsemen, that you can get for free on my website or just type it into a search engine, The Four Horsemen Film, so you don't get the original. And this Age of Empire has these four cycles that it goes through again and again and again. But you guys are in the hero class. It's your time, so to speak. And what's interesting about the millennials, and I have two daughters that are millennials, so I could speak with a little bit of experience is it's at least purportedly that you, not you specifically, but the millennials value experience over materialism. Now, when I was your age, it was all about what muscle car I could afford so I could feel strong and look good. But that's not true, generally speaking. You know, you're looking more at, you know, I was able to put so-and-so on my program, or I wrote this book, or I was able to persuade a whole college class after I did this workshop for 3 days about the importance of trust in the monetary system, or whatever it may be. And those are really valuable human experiences. I mean, those muscle cars rust, they wear out, can't insure them. I mean, trying to be funny here, but I do agree. And I think I've been kind of in the wrong generation, so to speak. I think that my thinking has been outside of what might generally is put on the baby boomer generation. I mean, really, it really bothered me greatly when at one time the biggest bumper sticker in LA was "he who dies with the most toys wins." If that doesn't show a kind of a sickness of materialism, I don't know what does. And yet, you know, a lot of people in that area specifically really bought into that, you know, and really, really believed it. You know, the film Wall Street, greed is good. Why is greed good? You know, so there's a lot of things that your generation is questioning and looking for. You know, what is of substance? You know, what is of real value? I say there's going to be a revaluation. I mean that in two ways. I mean, a revaluation of the currency system, or a reset, maybe a new system. But really, we have to revalue our values. Again, coming back to integrity, honesty, relationship. You know, at the end of your life, really, you look at your memories. You don't look at, oh, I had that car, I had that house. And no one sits there rocking in a rocking chair saying, I wish I worked more overtime. You look back at your relationships, and what you actually did with other humans is what you do. And some people leave a legacy and many don't. And it's not about a legacy. It's just living in your authentic self. And no one's in their authentic self anymore. They're in a 10-second selfie, and it's this view, and it's that view, and it's that view, and it's that view, and it's all very superficial. There's no real depth. Now, you two gentlemen have it, and God bless you both, and may you continue to grow, and may I continue to grow. Hopefully, one of my precepts is to never quit learning. You know, I'll never become a know-it-all, but I want to become a learn-it-all, and no one can learn it. So that gives me an open space forever till the day I take my last breath.
It's an ongoing journey, or doesn't matter what it is, right? And that's what's so great about that. You mentioned sort of the superficial stuff, and Nick and I kind of are always scratching our heads because, you know, Instagram has really dominated this whole theatrics of like what it means to be an investor or a day trader or an entrepreneur. And you really do a deep dive in some of these pieces of content, and it's really pumping that superficial materialistic type of, you know, psychology into all these kids, right? And they just think like, oh, if I don't have that, I'm going to be depressed. And, you know, I'll be honest, like there's times where like I have felt that way, but and I'm just like, wait, you shouldn't be comparing yourself to other people. Like, you've got your own journey, stick to it. You've got goals. Nick and I are working together, meeting people like you. But I just find it like that is what is sort of that tipping point of like how much more as individuals, can we take that type of materialism before we hit that bottom that you were talking about, right? Because at what point does everything become real, or does everything become fake? No one really knows the difference anymore. That's what's so crazy about sort of, I'd say even the last like 2.5 years. And like, I think the best example really is, you know, Trump being indicted for the fourth time. You know, and I see you smiling because it's just like that is like the belief now. There is such a divide between that, where one group of the population, and it's not just in the United States, it's pretty much in Canada and the rest of the world. Too, yeah. There's a whole group of people that think he's a criminal, he needs to be locked up. And there's an entirely different group that just sees, okay, let's look at the facts, let's look at the evidence. So it's like, I think this is the best example really of like what's happening in society. So curious to know, like, you know, where do we go from here?
It's like it became the Hollywood of our culture, the political system.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where do we go? Well, we're going to go where we need to go. I am a big believer that there's a financial mother nature, or a power greater than ourselves. And a lot of lessons in my life have been learned the hard way. And I think one of the hardest ways to learn this lesson is to have what I'll call an economic collapse. And I don't mean just a financial system collapse, which will occur with it, but it's a physical economy collapse. Not to where there's nothing trading and all that, but you already look at what the food situation is globally. Mm. And if you look at it from a scientific method and you determine that it takes 10 calories of energy to produce 1 calorie of food under the system that we're in, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that can't work for very long. And that's where we're at. Coming back, I want to make a further point about the materialism. There's a movie called I Am. As you both know, I'm a real fan of documentaries and learning. And in this film, I Am, it's about the director that directed Jim Carrey's early work, The Mask, and some of his earlier work. And this guy had it all. You know, he had the bigger Hollywood mansion, he had private jets, and he had it all. And yet he was very unfulfilled. It was very empty. So he started to look at what it was. So this documentary goes through a lot of things. But one that really stuck out in my mind was, if you go back into the 30s in the Depression, most of the public looked at people that had excessive wealth as being mentally ill. And to take that a step further, going back to Jim Dines, I won't give the other party's name, but he's probably one of the richest, best known in the mining industry. And he's, you know, billionaire class, maybe multiple billionaire. And Jim was teasing him and saying that he had more money. And this gentleman was getting irate because Jim is pretty well off, but he didn't have nearly the amount of money that this individual had. And so finally, he took him to the carpet and says, "What the hell are you talking about?" He says, "Well, I have more because I have enough." Whereas this other individual could never get enough, going back to maybe they do have a sickness. You know, if you can never be satisfied, you know, and that's kind of where I'd like to see the world, is where we all have enough, you know. Therefore, you know, why would you steal if you had enough? You know, why would you lie? I mean, there'd be a lot of things a lot different if we lived under natural law, even in the U.S., but globally, and we had enough. And right now, the whole system, and even Austrian economics, which I'm an adherent to mostly, but I'm trying to think outside of even that paradigm and have been for some time, that why do we have to base everything on scarcity? I mean, a lot of these things that we take for granted were taught in school, like you try to apply for a perpetual motion machine to the patent office and they'll throw it right back at you. Yet the universe works on on perpetual motion. I mean, the earth spins, the sun moves. I mean, all that stuff's perpetual. At least it's for billions of years. For all practical purposes, it's perpetual. But you try to do something like that, that's a natural thing that we all can observe and prove. Yet you try to put it into, you know, into an objective reality where you have, let's say, magnets that just stay there and spin something in the center of them or whatever. I don't want to get too off track here, but you get the idea that we have to get to what purportedly Einstein said. We cannot attack this problem with the same consciousness that God is. And that's where you guys come in the hero generation. You've definitely got to get outside the box. And what's the box? Well, basically the box is the TV set, or now it's Instagram, or it's TikTok, or it's, you know, pick another one, LinkedIn. I mean, some of the ones I'm on. You got to get out of there. You know, you got to get up to that 30,000 foot level and take a look and say, what is the meaning of this? And what purpose does it serve? And is it making it better or is it not? And maybe just going, you know, a different direction. I mean, me, old school might be, you know, a way to go. I'm not trying to lecture you, but you know, maybe that one-on-one workshop with 30 people and you give them handouts that are hard copy and you give them an assignment, they have to write it on a piece of paper and turn it in. There's a whole different thought process when you write. I know I've been doing it for 30 plus years. And somehow or other, there's just a different mechanism when I speak, do a speech or whatever, than when I write. I'd say when I write, I actually get a little bit deeper because the thought process, for some reason, the mechanics of having to actually write or type, it picks up a different modality in your neurons. And, you know, I want to be too corny here, but I love the fact that we have people like you coming up behind people like me, and there were my betters as well, that see the problem and are willing to spend their time and energy to correct it. So I commend you.
Well, grateful. That. We're grateful for you guys too, because without you guys, it's the learning curve is much slower. So the impact that we may or potentially one day have, or that we wish we can have, is as impactful as the impact you guys had on us.
Thank you.
You know, it translates over.
It was also, Nick, I'll let you ask your question. It was also a bit of a discovery phase too, because there's always been like these beliefs in my mind that something was a little bit off. And then to hear voices like yourself and, you know, there's a whole list of people to just say out what I was actually thinking just shows, okay, like there is a group of people that are not being brainwashed right now by the mainstream narrative, right? So Nick, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, dude, it's like an anchor outside the box. It's exactly. Something that we can kind of wrap a rope around and say, okay, we can pull ourselves out, and they can feed us information that could take us years or decades. You know, like I say, like most people, I find that most of the people, the information they know now that they are in their 50s or 60s or later on in their life, we kind of absorb that through social media and through these conversations and kind of incorporate them into our actions as a younger generation much earlier on. So hopefully as a younger generation rising up with this information, we can be more impactful and more effective with the information, because we know we're the second curve behind the original learning curve. But going on with the culture stuff, I wanted to ask you was like, what are some of, whether it's politically, culturally, or economically, like what are the risks you see differentially between generations, or, you know, what are the things that you think our generation variable wise should look for to kind of, to know, to see where we can kind of focus our attention to help mitigate certain risks?
Boy, that's a tough one. Well, we've already discussed it. I think the main thing is to be authentic self.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you're really authentic, so let's talk about it in terms of one of the teachings I studied for 8 years, and it's broken down and really, and I would love to keep things simple, essence and personality. So if you're on TikTok as an example, and it's all about your selfie and the right lighting and how good you look and all that, that's all about your personality. Mm-hmm. It has no real depth or authenticity. And yet, if you just do a snapshot, whatever you look like, but you have a real powerful message, being your authentic self, that'll come through. That actually will come through in the photograph if you resonate, if you're at a, let's say, higher frequency. So the main thing, I think, is to get back to basics. And another essence, personality. If you're speaking, you know, and believe me, I can talk. Anyone that's met me know that I can. But in your essence, every word carries weight. You don't say anything that isn't of meaning and power. And that's a very tough one for me, especially. I mean, taking a vow of silence for a day or whatever, very difficult. You know, so I won't talk for a day. You know, try it. But I think the main thing is back to trust and living your word. I mean, you know, you go back to my childhood and, you know, up until I was probably 19 or 20, most of us were taught, your word is your bond. I mean, your word meant something. It carried power. If you said you were going to X, help the person move or whatever, and you didn't, you know, you let yourself down and you let the other person down and you felt it. But now there is such a corruption throughout society that it's justified. Not that it could be, it shouldn't be, but it is, because everyone else is doing it. If the political class is stealing from us, if the medical or the, let's say, pharmaceutical class is doing stuff just for money or lying to us, and it's pervasive. It's through the political class, it's through medical education, it's through the whole system. And that's true. It always happens. In fact, back to the Four Horsemen film, it talks about this, that at the end of the Age of Empire, the emphasis is on chefs, the end of the Roman Empire. They would eat and purge, you know, and they were glorified entertainment. You know, some of the gladiators were the richest people in Rome. And sex, overemphasis on sex. So we're there, and you're there. And you are there to provide what you can. And sometimes not doing something is actually as important as doing something. Sometimes an inaction. Sometimes the best investment you ever made is the one you decided not to make. You know, that XYZ mining company was going to be a 100-bagger and everybody was jumping on the bandwagon like BreeX in my era. I never touched it. Turned out to be a total fraud. And so there's a lot of balance that we need that we don't have anymore. Nature preaches balance. If you eat the right amount of food, you stay a healthy weight your whole life. If you overeat, you get too big. If you undereat, you're too skinny. So that's something that hasn't been taught in our society in a very long time. The only documentary I could think of that brings it to fore is the I Am movie. You could say talks about balance, or, you know, when you have enough. And the millennial movie, you know, The Minimalist. And those two guys, it's very profound. I've only watched it once. I want to watch it again. But how freeing it was to have less. My mom grew up in the Great Depression. So did my dad, but my mom was actually older than my dad. And she used to say something to me that I didn't buy into at the time. She said, the more you own, the more it owns you. And the older I've gotten, I thought, yeah, you know, you got that boat, you got that car collection, you got that airplane. And all of a sudden, it's sort of a ringer, you know, sort of a chain, ball and chain. You know, you got to pay the dues on the marina and you got to clean it to get someone to take the barnacles off and all this. So there is that balance. I'm not saying you shouldn't have a boat or a car collection. That's up to the individual. I'm free market. Do what floats your boat. But be aware of what true freedom is. Sometimes the freest you'll ever be is on a camping trip where you're in a minimalist situation and you just brought enough food for maybe 2 days and you got to hunt for the next or whatever. I'm just giving you a metaphor, an analogy to the experience. Let me give you another one. This came from a health lecture that I went to. Nothing to do with my main thrust of economics and freedom. It had to do with health. But at the end of this lecture, this gentleman put up a slide and he said, you know, this is a lion, the king of the jungle. And it showed this majestic lion. I mean, a beautiful picture, and it's out looking over the savannah. And he says, you know, this is a true lion, an authentic lion. Let's call it that, because it was. And this authentic lion was just majestic, but didn't know where its next meal was coming. It had to hunt for it. Then it showed one that had free housing, free water, free everything. Even a mate that was free, and it was a lion in a zoo, and it was mangy, it was unkempt, it was depressed, and it really wasn't even interested in its mate. And that kind of gives you the idea of getting everything for free that you need to survive, and what it does to the moral character or the authenticity of the lion itself. Destroyed it. And so there's that balance, I think, again, that what is, you know, what is your purpose? What is the meaning? And, you know, this sounds corny, but I heard it in a meeting a long time ago, a men's meeting. You know, someone said, what's the meaning of life? He says, it's the meaning you give it. And really, that's true. I mean, if your whole life is revolving around TikTok and Instagram, trust me, that's not much of a life. But maybe it is for some people. I mean, there might be an exception where someone's really doing something profound on Instagram. I'm sure there probably is. But generally speaking, it's the purpose that you have. And so few people are taught purpose or entrepreneurship or any of the life skills that are really meaningful. You're just taught to, well, you're indoctrinated is what you are. You're not really taught critical thinking. And yet there's a Dan and there's a Nick, and they get outside the box and they start questioning everything. That's what I was taught. Question everything. Question authority. Question the cop. Question the teacher. Question your own premises. Ayn Rand said, check your premises. You know, where am I off? And I've changed my opinion on a few things. In fact, going back to the Austrian school, as much as I adhere to it, generally speaking, it's built on scarcity. Well, the universe is infinite. So are we really in a scarcity mode? Or are we just creating scarcity?
That's a valid point right there. I was just thinking too. I mean, the biggest thing for society right now too, where we're kind of seeing this cultural divide. I mean, we saw it last month. Oppenheimer, the movie, gets released. That's a historic event. And then you have Barbie, right? Which is like this whole idea that, you know, the patriarchy is a threat to society and empowering women. Listen, I think women serve a purpose in society, or we would not exist if that was the case. But there's this whole divide too, and it's like now I find it's just being thrown in our face, and it's constant now. And, you know, talking to some of my friends, some of our acquaintances too, you can really see where people's minds are just by what movie did you go see? Why did you like it? What did you like about it? And the ones that were able to articulate it the most actually, you know, they had a clearer sense of like what's happening. But the ones that couldn't, they got really offended, you know, and they're like, I wouldn't sit through a 3-hour movie. I'm like, but it's a historic event. It happened. It's the truth. Whether you like it or not is totally irrelevant. The other side is just like, you know, it's made up, whatever. It's going to be good for Mattel stock. There's no question about that, right? Yeah, so
right.
I found that just like, you know, this is where we're at. It seems like we're, you know, everything is being portrayed in the form of video content, and whatever is being ingested, people are just taking it at face value, right? And then that's it. There's no questioning anymore. So again, I just thought I wanted to share that with you because there's so much stuff happening that if you're observant, you really pick out what you're talking about.
Exactly. And that's real communication. I mean, in my master's program, we had a course of communication, and, you know, I didn't know what to expect. It sounded like it was kind of going to be a waste of time. It really isn't. It's very common sense. You wouldn't have to take the course, but you really have to communicate to get feedback, because most people assume when I talk to you, you understand exactly what I meant.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that. So I know what I mean. Yeah, of course I do, but does that mean you received it that way? And if you give me feedback, I'll find out pretty quickly. And it happens on texts all the time, you know? I mean, I'm pretty articulate, and most of my texts are probably at least taken pretty close to what I mean, but not always. Sometimes I did one with a family member, totally misconstrued it. And I read the text, and I realized you could see it two ways, right? And so, again, it's a communication situation, but again, looking at what you guys are doing, I mean, you know, what's your competition? I mean, there aren't many your age group that are thinking outside the box and providing content like you are. But then you got to compete about the cat doing the hula hoop, or, you know, all those other distractions that are out there. And there's a lot of them. So how do you get to purpose? And most people don't care because they're so easily entertained that they miss what's happening. There's an expression I just learned and brought up recently. It was in a doctor's office, and the nurse was talking about the types of people in the world. She said, there's two types of people in the world. I said, no, I think there's three. There's people that make things happen. There's people that watch things happen. And there's people that wonder what the heck happened. And that's, in my view, the vast majority. They just go along in life kind of wondering what's next and waiting for it to happen to them. It's the victim mentality. I didn't have anything to do with it. This happened to me, or this, you know, I should get my fair share, but you're not willing to do something about it, and that type of thing. It's very sad, but it's also a cycle. It's not like this has not happened before. It's not like we're unique. It's not like what's unique about it is that it's a global phenomenon. In the past, it was basically one nation state or one area. I mean, even the Roman Empire had the East and the West, and the Western collapsed and the Eastern Empire continued for some time. So there's a lot to it. I'm loving the discussion. I mean, if you guys want to get back on economics or silver or whatever, that's fine with me. But I think the higher purpose is really the ideas and ideals that make, you know, one's life or purpose authentic. I mean, you just really don't want to get to this state that's been indoctrinated, I'll say, and that's just being a phony. People don't realize they're a phony. And, you know, we all have personalities, but then when that's all you have and you have no essence, you really, in some cases, in this teaching I'm talking about, I won't name it, but there is a belief in that system. I'm not saying I agree, that with all personality, you really didn't even have a soul. That to have a soul, you had to have a meaning, you had to have purpose, you had to have understanding, you had to have real communication.
It's actually very true. I mean, just even talking and doing business outside, you know, you really get to see people's personalities. There's one particular trait, which I'm sure we're all familiar with, is like narcissism. Like, those are the type of people that you need to be careful around. There's no question about that. We want to end it off on more of the economic stuff too. Going back to what you said about a possible event at the end of the year. There's this whole rumor now. I don't know whether it's true or not, but obviously September is extremely volatile. October has been volatile. We're entering a really sort of bouncy time in this market. There's this belief too, especially from the contrarian side, that because mortgage rates, and you look at the 30-year mortgage rates at 7.3 today, that thing could potentially skyrocket to 8%. And again, this is all tied to like this behavior, this thinking of what's happening. That's why I find this so fascinating. But there's this belief that like we're due for like what's going to be a very significant credit event. What that means, I'm not sure. But, you know, using, I guess, you know, your studies in the last, you know, multiple decades that you've seen, you know, there's usually like this period of, you know, oh, everything's fine. And then all of a sudden it just smacks people in the face. So, you know, these next 6 to 12 months are going to be very interesting. What are you doing to just prepare for it and just stay hedged in this market?
Well, I could be called an extremist. I mean, I have a place in Montana that's off grid. It's propane and solar, and we grow our own food and we have animal husbandry. It's a couple of cabins. I own one, and my friends that are true homesteaders and I'm not are. And they know how to do, you know, all the animal stuff and everything else. So that's an extreme. But personally, outside of that, just to prepare on a financial situation, obviously you got to take a hard look at what survives and what doesn't. And in a hard downturn, it's the commodities that survive, and it's the ones that are needed, not wanted. So, you know, all the paper assets. I mean, the idea that the sovereign debt of the United States is the safest place to park your money is absolutely absurd, because anyone that can do math realizes that it's impossible to pay the debt back. So if you don't trust a dollar a week from Sunday, then why would you trust one 30 years out? And of course, now that's coming to the fore because interest rates are going up. I mean, money is a commodity like potatoes, and the interest rate set by the free market is what is the value of it. And, you know, going back to the mortgages, you make me laugh in a way, because when I was your age, I cashed out a mortgage on the second house I bought. I paid off the equity to the owner and assumed his loan because it was an 8.5% loan. And the loans at the time were about 11%. So I'm smart enough to know about money, how many, you know, thousands of dollars that saved me by cashing out his loan. And that was a very low loan at your age, when I was there, right? And now, of course, it's high relative to where they've been. Again, so much distortion in the market. But I think the way to mitigate it is to live within your means, have some precious metals and don't overdo it, and enjoy life. I mean, you don't need to be obsessed about these things. I get paid to be obsessed. It's just my nature. But I still have breaks. I still like to kayak, and I've got my dog, and, you know, I've got a lot of outside interests that, you know, balance my life. I don't want to be a one-note Charlie where all I ever look at is the Commitment of Traders report, you know, every day for the rest of my life. I've got more important things to do than that. But money is important. But again, keep it in balance. You know, and of course, it's easy for me to talk where I'm at. You know, I'm nearing my, you know, golden years, and I have enough for me. What I have probably isn't enough for some people, and it's probably more than enough for other people. But it's all relative. But having enough, that's the whole idea, other than, you know, that conversation I gave you, that, you know, no matter how much they have, it's never enough. That's pretty sad.
No.
Living between your means, living below your means is definitely the most underappreciated concept, I think, especially with this whole Instagram and social media fiasco. But yeah, no, I always laugh too. I mean, go back to the mortgage rates real quickly. There's like conversations with people. They're like, yeah, well, back in the days, like a mortgage rate had a, you know, 12% interest or an 18% interest. And I'm like, yeah, but are you forgetting the other 72 variables that included trillions of dollars of stimulus being printed and an obscene amount of credit card debt just piling on? Like, there's all these different factors that, you know, everyone's just focused on one thing, right? So I don't know. It's pretty crazy what's going on.
Bidenomics is working.
Yeah, exactly. David, I know you're going to be going to Vegas too. With Nick, you're going to that.
I'll be there, so I'll see you in person, David.
So I think it'll be good for us to obviously meet in person. I'll see if I can make it. But listen, I want to. for the essence of time, you know, where can the listeners find you again?
Yeah, well, the main website, the landing page is themorganreport.com. I've got a paid service and a free service. There's two steps to the paid service. I have the premium and the mastermind. And the best place to follow me is really Twitter. And I just got hacked 2 days ago. I was supposed to be on a Twitter Spaces, and I couldn't access my own account. At first, I thought it was kind of a glitch in the system. Turned out I was hacked. And luckily, my tech support is right on up there with the best of them. And I was able to retrieve it, get back on. I now have second authentication. Yeah. In other words, I have to go, which I'm glad to put on. It's a little bit of a hassle, but I probably won't get hacked again. But, you know, that's the world we live in. You know, who did it or why they did it, who knows? I'm not going to go there. I don't know. But what I do know is that I have a lot of faith that the power elite are so arrogant and so used to cheating that they presume that they're going to be able to bring on a new system and have us eat bugs and have nothing to be happy. And I don't think that's going to be implemented very easily. Just to go carry on a bit longer, the Asian community uses about 40% cash payments. And even in North America, 11% of all point of sales or final transactions are 11% in cash. So there's a lot of cash that's used right now. So to push into a cashless system won't be as easy as perhaps they think it will be. So there will be a pushback. There will be people that refuse to go along with the new game. And they might have it implemented. The last thing on that, which gets me kind of excited, is the human spirit. I mean, these people are not smart enough to program a CBDC. They have to hire some of us underlings to do that. So smart people, no doubt. But what if some of those smart people are true patriots and they put together a system that looks good on the surface for the CBDC, but 6 months down the road, it's got a back door, it blows up or starts taking money out of the accounts of the elites or whatever. I'm not saying any of that will happen. But what I am saying is that there is a pushback. People that are awake and see, they want absolute control over our lives. But if you have no control of your own life, what kind of a life do you have?
Mm-hmm. Goes back to that lion, the cage lion versus the wild lion. The individual spirit can only thrive in a space given where it can clash with its external reality, or else it's just a meaningless,
It's just existing. It's not living.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's nothing exciting there.
I think that's a really strong way to end it, because, you know, there's so much more that's going to happen. But David, we'd love to have you back on again. I think when Silver is going to do something, it's going to happen. We got to be a little bit more patient. Nick and I are stacking these things as we wait. So I think that's the most important thing. But
let me show you a few of mine just for the heck of it.
Go.
That's a Wan Bao. That's Chinese silver. They put it in the form of a boat.
Oh, nice.
And the symbol, the Chinese caricature for a bank is actually silver inside a building. That's from their old school. Silver, not gold.
Yeah.
Another one that's really, this was pretty tarnished. I've had on my desk for years. But that's a kilo. The kilos at one time were very difficult to get in the United States. They aren't now, but this is from Switzerland. And you can tell they actually drilled it out in the back. You might be able to see that. I don't know if you see that circle or not.
Yeah, I see the circle.
But they did that for an asset.
Hmm.
And what else have I got? Any more interesting ones? You guys familiar with the Silver Circle movie?
The Silver Circle movie?
Yeah.
No.
It came out. It was way ahead of its time. That's a coin from that. If you remember that time that Ron Paul showed a coin to Bernanke and talked about silver, that's what he was showing. The Silver Circle people gave Ron Paul one of these, and he actually took it.
I'll have to go watch that.
Bernanke with that.
We're gonna have to give our buddy Andy Scheckman a call if we want one of those kilos, right? It's probably
you'll have to tell me more about the do you have a collection of silver?
Well, I don't collect
like different
A little bit, odds and ends. I mean,
okay. But if ever you do, when we go to the conference, like I started my own little kind of like numismatic premium type of silver collection. I'll show it to you in Vegas there. But if you have others, by all means, show like have pictures, and I'd love to see them too.
Sure. And one thing I'll do if I remember, and I think I will, I've got a lot of these gold backs.
Oh yeah, the what are they called? Gold foil.
Yeah, so exactly. I give them out at the show. I'll be sure to give you one or two.
Okay, awesome.
Bring one home for me, Nick.
All right, I guess that's the end of our show and tell, us second graders. So
there's a little kid spirit in all of us, David.
Right? Absolutely, and keep it alive.
Of course,
exactly. Well, look, we're definitely going to bring you back on soon, and listen, enjoy your time in Vegas, stay well, and listen, we'll be following this craziness. We're pretty adamant and familiar with like what to expect, I think, and it wouldn't surprise us when it ultimately happens, right?
Yep. All right. Well, remember, chance favors the prepared mind.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
You have a prepared mind, so chance is in your favor.
We appreciate that. And we'll see you next time, guys, on the New Gen Mindset Podcast.
Ciao, guys. Take care.